The following podcast contains explicit language.
Previously on Empire on Blood.
You're not going to die, right?
I don't intend to.
Did you tell anybody about it before Alan Karen offered you a get out of jail card?
He's looking at me and laughing at me at the stand, telling me I didn't get you, but I got you.
I mean, Dwight was a gift.
You said you were ambitious, right? What was your ambition?
To take it where we was going. I didn't really put an end game there. We want to push it to the limit. Wherever it's going to go, let's all be rich living in a mansion somewhere.
This is Dwight Robinson. That we that Dwight talks about, that's him and Calvin Buari. Before Dwight flipped and helped put Cal in prison for life, he was friends with Cal. Together they were going places, according to Dwight. They shared a vision of how to get there.
I was watching a movie and they used the word manifestation, I think. Is that the word I'm looking for? Nah, it's another word. And the definition is you take what you want when you want. And that's the type of mentality we have. To rise above, if you gotta kill a few people to get what you want in life, so be it. If that's part of accomplishing your goal, so be it. As long as your goal is accomplished, you can build an empire on blood.
So Dwight Robinson looked at the corner and envisioned an empire. And the emperor, how does he feel about Dwight's view?
Dwight is a emphatical liar. I do not co-sign anything that Dwight says. Violence was never the key to nothing to me.
For Cal, it's been his life's mission to prove that Dwight is wrong and has always been wrong. But this is Dwight's episode. Yeah. This is Empire on Blood, a story of murder, betrayal, and a man who fought the law for two decades. And of a new friendship, my friendship with Dwight Robinson. I'm Steve Fishman. Dwight Robinson is crucial to this story. He sets all the players in motion. His decisions change their futures. But Dwight is complicated. He's one thing, then he's another. I know what he did, that's on the record, but why did he do it? That's what I want to know. Dwight had been a gift to the prosecution, an overachieving cooperator, someone on the inside who claimed to tell all. I'm a journalist. I like cooperators, too. I've been tangled up in this story for half a dozen years, and from almost the moment I got involved in this case, I knew that Dwight Robinson could be, would be, a valuable informant for me, too. But I faced a challenge. Dwight was not easy to reach. He was a guest of Sing Sing Correctional Facility. 2 years after he helped send Cal to prison, Dwight was convicted of gunning down a rival drug dealer. He was sentenced to 25 years to life. I couldn't just call Dwight on the phone. So I mounted a letter-writing campaign. My first missive to Dwight is dated November 2011. Quote, I think you were one of the people who knew the drug scene intimately and helped determine what went on there. I know that there was sometimes violence over turf and personalities and control, and I'm interested in understanding that better. Then, for 3 years, I heard nothing from Dwight. Until one afternoon, I was at a local playground with my youngest son when my cell phone rang. A recorded female voice announced the caller by first name, Dwight. Why now? I'd sent Dwight other letters after that first one. In each letter, I offered him a bit of information about Cal's case, things I knew and he didn't. Dwight was interested. Prison cut him off from the outside world, and I became his pipeline. And then also, Dwight was lonely bored. He was desperate for any tales of life on the outside. Tales that would let him think about something besides the crushing routine of prison. His calls became a regular feature in my life.
Dwight.
You been watching the news?
No, what happened on the news?
The mega, the Powerball is $337 million.
That would change your life, huh?
What is, hey, listen, you going out tonight?
Yeah.
Pick up a ticket.
All right.
Hopefully, if you got caught, you'd be like, hey, listen, we're both millionaires, you know?
Okay,
now,
go ahead.
Type in Timberland Chukka.
Oh, my
Timberland
God.
Chukkas. C-H-U-K-K-A. Okay, now, let me ask you this, Rod. Is there any, out of all the Chukka, is there anyone where the boots is all one color?
Hold on. Now, they're always two-tone.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to have two-tone. You're not allowed to have two-tone.
Oh, is that right? Wow. Well,
yeah.
You definitely shouldn't get these then.
Yeah.
Wow.
What you been up
to? I'm going off camping with my kid. Did you, you know, I always feel guilty telling you about life on the outside.
That's good because it takes me from your head.
Really?
Yeah. Now I'm thinking that when I get out there, maybe me and you could head up to Canada and hang out. You know what I mean?
Me and you?
Yeah.
Sure.
So over the years, I come to find Dwight entertaining, a little goofy. I know how that sounds. He's a convicted murderer. And maybe he is a little disconnected from reality at times. Canada, the two of us. But I like Dwight. Maybe I like him better knowing he's behind prison walls. But I come to think of Dwight as a friend. And also, I come to trust his insights. Well, some of them.
What is the first thing that you think about when you wake up in your cell?
It depends. Sometimes I get up and I just like another day in this place. Some days I get up and I think about my family. Some days I get up, think about my freedom. And we both men, so you know, some days I get up and I think about pussy, you know what I mean? You gotta keep it real, Steve, you know what I mean? You know, different days, different days. Sometimes I even wake up and I say, how the fuck did I get here? How did I end up in this bullshit?
I want to know the answer to that question, too. Dwight is bright, articulate. He could have ended up in other places. So how did he end up in this bullshit? One day I take the train to Sing Sing, the legendary state prison perched on a hill above the Hudson River. I pause on the steps of the main entrance, taking in the scenery. The view is breathtaking. You can see clear across the river. The prison authorities sequester us in a large rectangular conference room with a long table.
What part of the jail is your cell in here? Do you see the river at all?
Nah.
The room is dull, grim, in need of a paint job. Of course, there are thick bars on the windows. A corrections officer, our minder, sits at the far end of the table, listening with a sleepy expression.
So, I don't know. Tell me about growing up on 213.
So it was a lot of fun, man. You know, when I first came to this country, I was quiet. So me and my older brother, we got real close, you know what I mean?
Dwight was born in Jamaica. His family moved to New York when he was 7. His parents moved on to East 213th Street, just off Bronxwood Avenue, what would become known as the Corner on Blood. Back then, it was a nice neighborhood and a destination for Jamaican immigrants.
As we got to know everybody, started learning the neighborhood, just having a lot of fun growing up. Like, for me, though, I always liked being fly, being fresh. You know what I mean? For some reason, that was just my persona. And at a young age, I always thought about money. You know what I mean?
Dwight didn't grow up poor. His parents worked. There was always food on the table. And Dwight, He was the baby of the family. He says his mom liked to spoil him. Once Dwight told me he would have been a journalist if he'd grown up around me. Maybe. But Dwight grew up around people pursuing other career paths. It was the early 90s. One day, Dwight came home from high school, walked into the bedroom he shared with his brother, Peter. Peter and their upstairs neighbor were dividing a big rock of crack into vials, retail portions.
I said he was going through about $15,000 a week, and that's a lot of bottles to bottle up. So they started paying me to do the bottling up. That was my first interaction with drugs.
Dwight was just starting high school. At first, he limited his involvement, but he happily reaped the rewards.
My brother, he's my older brother. He loved me, so he was getting paid $1,000 a week back then. And every time he got paid, he'd come get me. Come on, we going shopping. You know what I mean? That's it. We wasn't thinking about doing nothing else that morning, but I got paid. Come on. A guy my age, the type of stuff I had wasn't normal. You know, I would go to school with leather jackets, Gucci links, you name it, polo watches, you know, and people in school, they couldn't believe it, you know. Every day I come to school with a different sneakers, different outfit. So for people my age, they was like, fuck is up with this guy, you know?
Dwight and Peter, they love each other and they lean on each other. The older brother protects Dwight from danger and he is well equipped for the task. Everyone describes Peter as tough, yeah, but not like normal tough. There's something unreasonable about his toughness, like crazy. A dealer from the neighborhood told me how Peter had metal braces on his teeth and how one day he watched Peter take the braces off with a fork. To Dwight, his brother had superpowers.
It's hard to explain. It's like violence is, he mastered violence. If you want to go to mythical beings, he would be like a war god or something. Violence is so easy to him. And he sees it. He sees everything. I wasn't violent at a time, but I know to get money. My brother blows money, but he sees things.
So Dwight is more the thinker, the plotter, the schemer. His brother is the war god. And then there's Cal, another thinker. Dwight looks up to him, too.
If you're a thinker, you always want to respect another thinker. It's like Socrates and Plato, Aristotle. They're all thinkers. And that was their bond before anything. They was all thinkers. They thought outside the box. So his mind, I respect his mind. His ways is a different story.
Cal used to pick Dwight up at school in his BMW.
Even back then, he used to always say, yo, you remind me of me. You know, and a lot of people, for some reason, thought that me and him was brothers. You know, I remember guys just be like, yo, I seen your little brother. And I think that kind of made us have a bond.
Every minute they spend together is a chance for Dwight to be more like Cal, to act like him, to dress like him. For Dwight, this was as close a relationship as he could have wanted with his idol.
We had genuine love for each other. At one point, we slept in the same bed. We had one bedroom apartment out of town. Nobody wanted to sleep on the floor. So we would all sleep sideways, you know what I mean?
Now Dwight, he may have had a genuine love for Cal, but Cal has a different point of view.
You know, for me and Dwight, there was really no loyalty there. Dwight Robinson and me really never had no personal friendship, so to speak. We had a business relationship.
Sometimes I think Dwight and Cal live in parallel universes. I wonder how much of Dwight's view is enhanced. Not an intentional fiction exactly. It's true for Dwight. But I think he might take these conversations with Cal, these shared moments, and compress them so that they have a dense emotional gravity for him. Now, in fairness, Cal's view may have evolved, given what happened later. But these days, he's insistent. Dwight meant nothing to him. He was useful.
Dwight Robinson was an individual that, you know, brought things for me when I was in the street. And that's the way that me and his relationship consist of.
So who's got it right? We'll find out after the break. We're back with Empire on Blood. In our conference room at Sing Sing, the officer who's supposed to mind Dwight Robinson and me, he's fallen asleep loudly. His name is Tyre.
He's out, man. Tyre.
So Dwight jolts Tyre awake by banging on the table.
Tyre, he's snoring, man, loud.
The officer wakes up. Dwight and I get back to our talk, exploring how he got into this bullshit. Dwight had been a high school kid doing a few errands for drug dealers.
You know, Dwight, I feel like sometimes your life kind of ended in 97. Do you ever think that?
Yeah. Yeah, but I actually feel it was not. Honestly, I think it ended in 91.
Why?
Because I honestly had a chance to be a legit working guy. I didn't want to go knee deep in the drugs. I feel that after I got cut, it left me no choice.
Here's what happened. One day when he was 16, Dwight put on one of his new outfits, new sneakers or maybe chukkas, and headed to the park. A member of Cal's crew was there, a light-skinned kid with startling green eyes. Let's call him Green Eyes. Green Eyes aimed a giant water gun at Dwight.
So I got real mad. I was like, yo, son, stop fucking squirting me with the Super Soaker. So he put it down, broke a bottle, was going like this. So I turned to walk away, he actually threw it. And it cut me. Got 32 stitches behind that.
The wound left a large, dark scar on Dwight's neck. As he talks about it, his mood darkens too.
So I felt handicapped. That's how I literally felt, handicapped. I lost focus in school, and I felt that the streets would be easier to move about, feeling the way I felt. Being in the street was like where I belong now, with the rest of the dysfunctional people. Regular society for normal people, I didn't feel normal no more.
Just because of this stuff?
Yeah. And who I was. I used to get up and look in the mirror every day. I loved the mirror. After I got the scar, I didn't like the mirror too much anymore.
I can barely make out Dwight's scar. My first reaction, that kind of playground incident doesn't qualify as life-changing. But then I think about my own life, about things that changed me, but aren't obvious to others. I have epilepsy. For a long time, I had seizures 3 or 4 times a year. Add those up, it's only a few hours. But the possibility of a seizure was always there. Every step I took on the subway, on the stairs, always, always, I felt fragile, guarded, fearful. I kept my condition, my wound, as private as I could. Dwight couldn't do that, not with a looming scar.
Fought the odds my whole life, man. You know, came from another country. Came to this country where people used to tease me just because I wasn't from here. You know? I'm used to being the odd guy out.
But Dwight, he didn't like being the odd guy out. He wanted to belong. Cal, too, was from an immigrant family, but Cal, he was self-sufficient, smooth, cool, confident. Cal was always going to be all right. Something inside Dwight, though. I think he always felt like it had to be fixed. All the perfect new outfits couldn't change that, and the jagged scar made it evident. Soon after the scar incident, Dwight dropped out of high school and started hustling full-time in the streets, where he felt he belonged. There is one benefit to his new life, of course. Dwight gets to hang with Calvin.
The guy was like a movie star. He did everything over the top, you know what I mean? He actually, in his mind, the guy used to say stuff like this to me, literally said this to me. They're going to make a movie about me. I swear on my mom. He would say stuff like that. That's the type of life he was, that flamboyant, you know what I mean?
Dwight remembers Cal as a godfather, the godfather, like in the mafia. Cal actually has the word Calione tattooed on his neck, an homage to Don Corleone. Godfather Calione took care of people, paid the rent if someone faced eviction, bought groceries for people short on cash, and if you were his friend, Calione treated you like a king. $100 cigars, $100 shots, $10,000 suites in Vegas. Cal could drop $50,000 in a weekend. With Cal, Dwight thought the future looked bright. Their future.
I don't know what it was. Maybe it was Calvin and his swagger, whatever. Everybody that was going out of town wanted to come there and show their wealth. So that block became the magnet for, it was the it block. And there was times you come on the block and just see this crew pull up with their cars. There's times when you would see about 50, I'm talking about you name it, was on that corner. Just like, wow, life is good. From the outside looking in, it looks beautiful.
After the break, the beautiful life ain't so beautiful. On the corner on Blood, the blood starts to run. We're back with Empire on Blood. My friend Dwight, he's a lot of things, but one of them that I come to appreciate is his shrewd insights, particularly for the darker side of things. Dwight, he has a bead on evil. He knows why good people do bad things. And well, I find him poetic. His phrase, Empire on Blood, pure poetry.
You're like an evil poet. Evil poet?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not bad.
Or maybe it's the poet of evil.
Yes, that's even better. But not in a bad way. In a sinister good way, you know?
As a teenage crack dealer, Dwight's life is going pretty well. He has cash money, a backpack full of it, he tells me. He buys expensive cars. He buys Gucci links and Bali shoes. He and Cal are tight. A prosperous future is in the offing. Except Dwight bears a grudge. A grudge against Green Eyes, the drug dealer who threw the bottle that cut his neck. Dwight got the scar in 1991. It's 1995, and Dwight still wants revenge. But Dwight feels he can't make a move without a nod from the Godfather. And Calione, he's known Green Eyes for years. Cal is protective of his crew.
I think he decided he had to make a choice. And I think he said, you know what?
He chose Green Eyes.
You know, and he made a choice. So now I had to make a choice. You know what I mean? It's going to be, again, his terminology, cut the head off, the body will fall.
Cut the head off. Dwight may hold a grudge against Green Eyes, but he's furious with Cal. Dwight feels spurned. That's Cal's head he's talking about.
When you look up to someone and you give him your all, and I did a lot for that man, you know what I mean? He had to admit it. I kept him in power. Like I said, at one time, I was his number one money maker.
Dwight's motives may arise from hurt feelings, but Dwight is ambitious, too. He's starting to chafe under Cal's control.
From the outside looking in, we're making money. We live in an easy life, but it's not easy. Every day you wake up and go to the street, you put your life on the line, one way or the other. Now, for us out there taking chances, and the majority of the drugs that's being sold by us is yours, meaning Calvin, it got to a point where he started, felt like he got to slow me down.
In early 1995, Cal spends several months incarcerated at Rikers Island. He's got expenses, lawyers, bail, trials and tribulations, as Dwight puts it. And if Cal's off the streets, he can't distribute crack. And if he can't distribute crack, he doesn't have money coming in. Dwight's developed his own crack supply. Does he even need Cal? Dwight has already started collecting the symbols of power, the very ones Cal used to have.
There was a time back then when I used to go to his apartment. He had a nice apartment down in the South Bronx somewhere. He used to have a little fish tank with piranhas in it. And we used to go, we used to mess with the piranhas. His apartment was real, real, real nice. Now, by 95, you come home, all this trial and tribulation you're going through, you're living with your mom, because you lost that. He comes home, nice apartment. I got a big 60-gallon fish tank with all kinds of piranhas. And it's like, yo, remember, you know?
You got that.
Yeah.
According to Dwight, Cal is the one to make the first move, a preemptive strike. After he's released from Rikers, Cal supposedly chases Dwight with a gun. Cal denies this, but in Dwight's telling, he has to turn to his brother Peter for protection, his brother, the war god.
I go to the crib. We talk for a while, what it's going to be. The brother made a decision, and we go.
Peter and Dwight stake out Cal. He's with his best friend, Jay. They're on their way to the city for a night out. Dwight and the war god set up in the bushes. At Sing Sing, Dwight is about to tell me the rest of the story when he pauses.
The statute of limitation is...
Seven.
Five, I think. On attempt murder. Yeah, but anyway, I don't know if he said something. He turns the car on and get back out. Stands and look around. And he gets back in. Actually, you know, it's just raining shots.
What Dwight means is that he and his brother jump out of the bushes and they make it rain shots.
I think Jay get hit like seven times. And Calvin, you know, gets lucky, gets one in the leg. Jay was dead in the waters. And even when he was coming out the car, you could see blood coming out of him. And we decided that he wasn't... Jay, growing up, Jay lived upstairs from us. We always had a different kind of bond with him. So at that particular time, he was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know what? Huh? He's not a threat anyway.
Dwight and his brother, they let Jay live. Cal escapes and is hospitalized with a leg wound. A detective visits Cal in the hospital, asks who shot him, but Calione, he won't snitch. Omerta, as the mob says, code of the streets, and also practical. Cal once explained to me, you could get penalized to death for snitching. So Cal limps out of the hospital a few days later without having revealed the names of his would-be assassins. The limp, that's a metaphor. Cal is handicapped. He can't control the crack market the way he used to. A turf war breaks out for control of the local empire. Dealers run for their lives, not fast enough. One week after Dwight and his brother try to kill Cal, Dwight's brother is shot dead. Who murdered Peter? No one is arrested. But first, Dwight and his brother try to kill Cal. Exactly 1 week later, Dwight's brother is shot dead? Come on, isn't it obvious? Dwight certainly thinks so. Cal denies he had anything to do with Peter's death. He says Dwight and Peter had plenty of enemies, which is no doubt true. But, well, the timing is interesting. Remember what Cal said?
Violence was never the key to nothing to me.
Yeah, sure, but Cal, bodies are falling all around you. You've been shot. And what you're telling me is you're some kind of conscientious objector Gandhi among the gangs? Really? So the murder rate in the Bronx is soaring. Cal survives. Jay also lives, but soon half a dozen others are dead.
Everything was on the news. It was in the papers. They were just saying that the violence at that point was just because it was just so much, all because of that one corner.
The corner on blood. The police summon the relatives of the dead to the station. They summon Dwight, who's in an emotional state.
How did you feel when Peter got killed?
I would say guilt and anger. At some point, my greed said that for me to accomplish what I want to accomplish, would I be willing to do that for untold riches? Yeah, I would try. I would roll the dice, and my greed cost my brother's life. It was these guys is not bad dudes, you know what I mean? Under circumstances of how we came up, it's just that size was chosen. Nobody put a gun to our heads and say that you have to do this. This is what we willingly chose, and that comes with it. When it hit close to home, it hurts, but did I want revenge? Yeah.
Dwight is almost 6 feet tall and lean. I can imagine him at age 21, sitting in the police station, soft-spoken, clean-cut. He's sometimes dressed like a prep school kid in button-down Gap shirts. He sits across from a detective.
They take out a stack of a picture of dead people. As I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, this is what it looks like up close and personal.
Dwight is cool as a fan. He's seen plenty of dead bodies in his young life. In Dwight's memory, the police detectives recalibrate their approach.
They said, look, we know you and your brother try to kill Calvin and Jay.
Dwight is convinced the cops have a witness to his attempted murder of Cal. So from Dwight's point of view, the detective is threatening him. But at the same time, he's suggesting that, maybe there's another way to handle this.
It's like, as much as he's pressuring me, I could see like he wants to work something out with me, he sits down, we start to talk. He says, listen, you're not our main target. We want Cal. And we felt that he had something to do with your brother's death. And I knew he did, but I knew they didn't have nothing. I knew it was a clean hit. So at this point, I says to myself, I could give him up. At that point, it was about victory. And I felt that he was in the winner's seat at that point. So I was like, I'm not going to let him win. With that said, I gave him the Harris Brothers. So it wasn't no coming back from that, you know what I mean?
It's worth noting that, yes, Dwight flips on his idol. He is a snitch. But hey, snitches can still tell the truth. Back in Sing Sing, our interview is coming to an end. I asked Dwight about the street code, about Omerta. For Dwight, it's about how Cal treated him.
You're telling me it's okay for you to rob me? It's okay for you to try to murder me? It's okay for you to lie to me, steal from me, kill my family if you had to, but telling is forbidden. Who made that rule? I'm gonna make my own rules, how I'm gonna play.
Remember Cal's trial? Dwight's on the stand. Cal's attorney is cross-examining him. Ken Schreiber asks Dwight point blank, did you have anything to do with the shooting of Calvin Bowari? Dwight responds, no, I didn't, sir. At Sing Sing, I ask him about his lie under oath. That's perjury and supposedly a crime. Now, the prosecutor, Turtleman, told me he didn't know that his star witness had tried to murder the defendant. Apparently, the cops neglected to share their suspicions with him. In Dwight's mind, though, everyone knew. It was no secret.
So were you surprised because you denied it in court? Were you surprised that Alan Karen didn't say anything or the detectives didn't say anything?
Not surprised, because at that point, I understood that in the fight against crime, people play dirty. There's no set rules. It's a dirty game all around the board. So for people to feel like there's certain rules that they're going to lose all the time, you know, so I wasn't surprised. I understood what was being done.
A dirty game all around. I leave Dwight at Sing Sing, leave the guard to his nap, past the barbed wire and the gun towers, into the sunshine, into the beautiful view of the Hudson River. Leave behind my friend Dwight, the rat. Next on Empire on Blood, a surprise meeting between former colleagues from the corner on Blood. Both are now in prison. One day on the chow line, guess who Dwight bumps into?
They looked at like, these two guys are a problem. Let's just have one of them kill each other and just get on with it.
Corrections screwed up and they should have never, ever put them in the same facility. But they did.
Empire on Blood is produced by Emil Klein and Mia Lobel with Joelle Doucet. Our editor is Julia Barton.
It's time to go.
Original scoring by Joel St. Julian, theme song by Mr. Len. Fact-checking by Stephanie Daniel. Special thanks to Jason Gambrell, Evan Viola, Christopher Landry, Rachel Strom, Nicole Buntis, Christy Mirabal, Kate Miscal, Lisa Firestein, Jacob Smith, Carly Migliori, and Andy Bowers at Panoply. I'm Steve Fishman. A kingdom built of blood leaves the king lonely. Bear the burdens of your sins and then only. Beware the blurred line between friend and foe. The last words you hear.
It's time to go.